Hi, friends. Welcome back to Out of Focus. I'm Shannon Stewart, and today I'm sitting down with Jerry for a conversation I think so many of you will resonate with. Jerry grew up in a very structured, legalistic church environment, and over time, his faith moved from rules and pressure into a real, personal relationship with God. His story includes unexpected jobs, stepping out in faith, seasons of real financial hardship, and learning what it looks like to trust God even when the future feels uncertain. If you've ever grown up around faith yet you still feel far from God, this conversation is for you. Jerry, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Before you came here, I was a little concerned about the chairs. Most people listen to the podcast, but for those on YouTube, they can see how tall you are.
Yeah, I was actually wondering about that myself. I saw Mike in it and I was like, let's see how I look. I hope I don't overtake the chair or anything, but it seems to work out good.
But you fit.
I fit, which is amazing.
And awesome. What were the two things I told you? You got to say these two things.
Well, you always have to start off with the too easy. And you can always finish with a hey, hey.
Those are like your coined words or expressions of whatever
somehow,
you say.
Somehow it's just known. And it, people see me out in public, and especially on the golf course, and you'll just hear hey, hey out in the field somewhere. You don't know what it is, but you know they're calling you, and you just wave hi. You don't know who you're talking to, but you have fun with it.
It's super catchy.
Yeah. I don't even recall where it came from, to be honest with you, but it's just something that kicked in, and it definitely stays with you. So it's very recognizable, and I'll walk into somewhere and it just comes out. I remember me and Evelina, my wife, we were in Jamaica and came out the second day to a pool. And you hear like five people go, hey, hey, out of nowhere. I was like, okay, we made an impression apparently yesterday. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
I still never forget when we went on the tour to Israel. And I guess they don't see people that are as tall as you.
Right.
So they were like, oh my gosh, wow. And they asked you to take pictures with them in Italy and Israel.
Yes, that's exactly correct. And then you outshined me because they recognized you at the pizza place.
Well, Top Model is aired in many, many countries, which it's still crazy to me that it's that known, but yes.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I got a little competition here.
So tell me, what was little Jerry like growing up? What were you like as a little boy?
Yeah. I was raised in Boca Raton, Florida for the first 11 years of my life. Dad worked for IBM and mom worked for a telecommunication company called Southern Bell, which I think now is probably, it changed names. It might be AT&T now. But for the first 11 years, lived there and moved to Durham in 88. And from there, we came up here. Dad got moved up here with IBM and was in church growing up. I was in Juana's and all that good stuff growing up. And then we moved to Durham, found a good church and had been part of that till I was 18 or 19, and it was all independent Baptist. I think the church I grew up in Florida was more Southern Baptist, and then came up independent Baptist. Got very active at a young age in church, and I was always part of the bus ministry and stuff like that. I was always afraid to get in trouble, not for any reason other than I knew that if I never got in fights or anything in school, because I wasn't worried about who I was getting bullied by. I know that seems weird, me being tall and big and getting bullied, but
I was bullied actually.
Yeah, it was more I was worried about getting disciplined by my father when I got home. So that was one of the things to prevent me from ever getting in trouble. I was never really a hellion, to be honest with you.
So you never got grounded or anything?
I got grounded, I'm sure.
So what would you get grounded for? I know you won't believe this, but mine was for back talking.
Yeah, I got back slapped for back talking. I was disciplined and stuff like that, but it was nothing I look at as abuse. As now kids would call what happened to us as being abused, but I'm grateful for the discipline I was raised with. Some of the things I got in trouble for would be talking back. I think that's probably the gist of it. And that's a normal teenage thing that comes in, unfortunately. I guess the hardest part about raising kids is being consistent with whatever you do.
That's true.
Whether it be discipline or what have you. That's one of the things we found that's one of the most difficult parts about raising kids, because you love them. You want them to get away with, not get away with certain things, but hey, just do the right thing. Don't make me have to discipline you. But it's having the consistency of doing that. That's important. So I try to take things I've learned as a child, and you always want to do better for your own children and stuff. But I've definitely failed on many, many ways, but I've always tried to learn from my failures as well.
And my parents disciplined me because they also, we'll get to this in a minute, about your job as a cop, how you respect authority.
Yeah.
They were my parents. I needed to respect their position.
That's exactly correct. Yeah. I was always yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am to anybody. As long as if they were older than me, that's just the way I was raised. I'm not a good old country boy or anything like that. I was always raised to respect your elders. It could be a stranger in a parking lot. It was always yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am.
What was your view of God?
Yeah, I was raised in church. I think when you're raised in church, especially at a young age, like from birth pretty much, I think you don't know any other way. And I think it's one of these things that when you become a teenager or whatever is when you start questioning certain things in life. You start questioning, well, if God's real, why isn't this happening? That's when you were raised to not to question things, but you were just raised to believe always one thing. But I think when you're a teenager, at least for me, that's when it became more of, what is God really doing for me? How do I know I'm not just living a life of wasting my time going to church and being involved in church? As a teenager, I got really involved in the youth department. It was Sunday school, then Sunday evening service. Tuesday night was soul winning. We'd go out, visit neighborhoods and stuff like that. Wednesday night, midweek service. Thursday night was Friday night youth activities for the youth department. And Saturday morning was bus ministry. You'd go visit the bus ministry. And then Sunday morning, you get up, go pick up the kids from the bus ministry, go to church, yada, yada, drop them off. And that's...
You went more than me.
That was my life for probably 4 years, I would say, from the time when I was 14 to 18, yeah, in that time frame, yeah.
Would you say the church you grew up in was legalistic or?
Yeah, it was very similar to Mike's church. Mike's was free will and mine was Independent Baptist. His was, they believed you could lose your salvation, but we did not. And that's where the difference was. But actually, as you're aware, I went to private school where I grew up at church. They had changed their views to Independent Baptist views at that point by the time we were going there.
So people listening that don't know their views, what were some of their views?
Sure. Yeah. Girls don't wear pants.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Guys, definitely with no shorts. Girls wear culottes. So long, flowy shorts that go below the knees. I think they measure like 3 or 4 inches below the knees. And in fact, when I played basketball at the school, we actually wore long, like nylon sweatpants. In the game, not warm-ups. Our warm-ups were our game uniforms.
Wow.
Yeah, and stuff like that. There was nothing really about makeup or anything like that. Girls could wear makeup, and remember, girls would carry their caboodle sets or caboodles.
I remember that.
Look like a tackle box to me. Yes. When we would go on youth activities or youth outing, girls would have that with them. There was no mixed bathing, as they called it. It's not really bathing. It was swimming together. There was guys and girls. Girls had their own swim time. Guys had their own swim time. There was no intertwining of that at all. Going on any dates, they were always suggested. Obviously, you're a teenager, you can do whatever you want or whatever, but it was frowned upon if you didn't double date or have a chaperone with you. So those are some of the basics. I don't want to say we were brainwashed, but it was very, it's this way or you're going to burn and go to hell type of thing. And so that was really where.
So you obeyed out of fear instead of obeyed out of reverence for who he is.
I think it was a combination of both. I didn't know any other way, really. Again, I always did it because I enjoyed doing it. I really did. I never went out to parties or anything like that. Probably, I was just never invited, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah, I was never really invited to parties, and I always spent so much time in church. And again, I was no goody two-shoe by no means. I don't want it to sound like that. I felt like I was a normal teenage kid. I played football. I played basketball.
Did you play those through high school?
I did. Well, my freshman year, I played football at Southern Durham. And then I was recruited to Mount Zion in Durham, which was a charismatic school, which I did not know, where they actually spoke in tongues. It was a little eye-opener for me. So it was a different. Not to mention, I was one of only two or three other kids in the area that went to school. I was white. So I was the minority in the school, but they treated me very well. Minus the speaking in tongues thing, I really had a good experience, but that was not my cup of tea. And so Liberty Christian School, actually, where I went to school there, sixth and seventh grade, they actually found my parents couldn't afford private school anymore for me. So we went to public school, but they found some families that were willing to help support me and my brother, get us back into Liberty Christian School, which we're very grateful for. And we played basketball for them. Some would look at it as we were paid to play basketball for them, but they got a championship out of it. So that,
wow.
So that worked out. And so, but that was fun. I don't want to say I was robbed. If I would have went to public school with my size, I would have been exposed to more and playing more. I've probably been playing football somewhere, definitely collegiately. And who knows where the professional level would have went with that, but definitely at least collegiately. You don't pass up on 6'9", 325 pounds too often. I didn't really know what I had, to be honest with you. I was never really pushed by my father for it either, but just didn't really know any better. But it really wasn't that important to me either at the time. So,
was there anything internally that you were struggling with growing up? I struggled with an eating disorder, so yeah. I hid that for a while because I was ashamed and I was trying to not let people know why I was so thin after I had a growth spurt. I didn't know if there was anything in particular.
Yeah, I don't want to say there was anything that I can't recall. Let's put it that way.
Well, maybe you were questioning God, like, are you who you say you are?
Yeah, but I think that came with anything. There was nothing that was a pure struggle for me. Life came pretty easy to me. I was used to being broke. I think I've told you this before. My dad would go write out a check for $25 just to get cash, knowing it was going to bounce and cost $25 to bank return fees and stuff like that. The phone would get cut off. I knew that was the time to pay the bill. That's how I was raised. It was never raised how to save money. I don't say I struggle with, but I look back with those are things that would have been nice to have been raised differently on. But, you know, struggle, we never had money, but they always tried to provide for us. We lived above our means, unfortunately. But the struggle was, you don't know unless you know.
Like, true.
Yeah. So to me, that was just normal life.
So how did you get to be a bouncer?
Oh, boy. Yeah. So I was going to a nightclub. I'll be honest with you. I really don't remember how all that came together. I remember going to a nightclub because I wasn't going to church anymore at this point.
So would you say that you walked away from him for a little while?
When I turned 18, I got a taste of the real world, went to my first nightclub, and I was hooked at that point. I was like, oh, this is awesome. Now I know what nightclubs are like. That was a really piece of junk bar.
It's because you were so sheltered with your church and school, and it was like, I'm free or something.
It's 100% correct. And getting attention from girls, the girls that I was raised with, I've known them for years, and there was nothing. I never really dated anybody or anything like that. We were together all the time. We always just hung out. So I never was really involved in dating or anything like that. But once I turned 18, that all changed, and I pretty much fell away. I never really went back to church until I met Evelina.
So tell me about that for people that don't know who she is, your lovely wife.
Yes. So actually.
And you met her when you were being a bouncer.
That's exactly right. We worked at Long Branch, and it used to be a huge nightclub in Raleigh, a country western bar. Half of it was like country western. The other half was top 40 hip hop. And then half and half. And then there was like a disco retro side and stuff to it. But anyways, I was working there, and I actually was dating another girl, and we had broke up, and I thought about quitting there for a while, and I was like, I'm good, but football was coming back into my life. Getting to the point where I was going to play semi-pro football was coming back into my life out of nowhere. But then I met Evelina while I was there, who's now my wife. Been gladly married for 22 years, 23 years. We're getting ready to celebrate 23, I believe, is what it is.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I met her there. I was a bouncer. She was a cocktail waitress, and we went out. We'd been one date, and we'd been together ever since.
Wow. So what was it about her? She's from Poland, for everyone that doesn't know, has an amazing accent, the sweetest person.
She's definitely the sweetest person. I love her so much. No, she's awesome. But you learn a lot about what a relationship is and what it really takes and what the real struggles are. But with Evelina, I'll be honest with you, I knew that I really liked her. And at this point, I was dating a lot. I think I was like 23 years old. But then when I met her, there was just something about her I liked. And it just clicked. She was very beautiful. She was very easygoing. And we were very compatible. We got along. And she was very intelligent. We complimented each other.
And she's actually a nurse.
Yeah, she was in school to be a nurse at that time. And things started getting serious with us. And football ended up jumping about a year into it, a relationship. Football just ended up not working out. And she's getting ready to graduate being a nurse. And I'm like, well, I got to get my stuff together. I was like, I'm just a bouncer.
Hey.
I'm just a bouncer. And I got to do something with benefits. So I looked at TSA. I was like, well, what's the longest job I've ever had besides delivering furniture? It was being a bouncer. And I said, what about being a cop? And so I ended up, did some research, went to put myself through law enforcement training school at Wake Tech. And from there, became a cop. And so now felt good about, I had a career in line. She had a career going. And we decided to get married about 6 months later, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And again, that was a long time ago. We've been together ever since.
So what was it like being a cop?
That was fun. I had a lot of fun with it.
I'm sure it's different when you were a cop to what it is now. But
Yeah, it's definitely different, especially with cameras being everywhere. And not that anything shady was being done. You could be put on social media all the time for anything. And it's not safe. It's not secure for your family. People can easily find out who you are if you wrote them a ticket or arrested them or whatever. Information's a lot more easily accessible now. It's not as safe being a cop now, I guess, is where I'm going at with that.
How long were you a cop for?
5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember they had all Crown Vics for everybody, but then they actually took a Crown Vic and they took the cage out
What's a Crown Vic?
It's a style vehicle. Sorry.
A Buick?
Yeah, it's a big car. It was a big car. And the cage is normally behind the driver's seat. And that's where you would arrest people and you put them in the back seat. Well, I wouldn't fit in the car like that. So they actually had to take the cage out and they had to rebolt the seat back. They totally customized the car for me. They actually moved the seat back like 4 inches and rebolted and secured the seat there. So I could actually get in and out of the vehicle comfortably.
That is funny.
Yeah. And then when I arrested somebody, instead of them being in the back, they actually sat next to me.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So I put them in a seatbelt, sat next to me, and I was like, hey, is there any music you want to listen to while I'm taking you to jail or anything? You know, anything you're interested in?
Oh, wow.
And I've got told multiple times I was the coolest cop that ever arrested them.
I can see that.
So that's why I say I had fun. When I would write somebody a ticket, I either would, I would say yell at them, but I would lay into them and give them a stern warning and I'd let them go. Or I was just very nice and polite to them. Either way, I was nice and polite to them, but I was very respectful. Let's put it that way. But I would just write them a ticket to the point where they actually thanked me. For writing tickets, and I was like, yeah, you know, make sure I tell them you're polite and cooperative and all that good stuff. It was your first offense. I'll try and help you out as much as I can. They always said, thank you. And I'll never forget one lady said, I don't know why I just thanked you for writing me a ticket. I was like, well, have a good day if you need anything else. I remember one time this kid had a low car. And so instead of tapping on the window, I tapped on the sunroof of the car one time and talked to him, said, can I have your license registration, talking down to you?
Oh my gosh.
So that's what I said. I had fun. It was a good time. It was a learning experience for me. But again, how I was raised, I never wanted to get in trouble. I was always cautious about what I did. I never took anything for granted. I was always aware of my surroundings. If they told me in the academy, be careful of this, that just stuck with me. And then about the final year of me being a cop, Evelyn and I were getting ready to have our second child. And so we were going to move into another house. And we had custom built this house. And everything, the head showers were made for me, my height and all that stuff. And then during this time frame, we had our house on the market and people were coming and viewing the house and they were able to leave their feedback and like, well, we like your house, but we're looking for a fenced in yard. And that feedback came back several times. So I got quotes from other fence companies, what it would cost to build the fence stuff. And there was no really YouTube and Google. I mean, it was there, but it was not like it is today. And I said, you know what? I priced out everything myself. And I said, I could do this myself and save $1,000 and I'll have some power tools in the process. On a cop salary, that was really cool. Having a $400 nail gun or $300-$400 nail gun was, I was like, oh, that's really awesome. What else can I build? So we did that and I actually ended up building my own fence. Biggest piece of junk I ever built. Oh, it was horrible. But I built it. And my neighbor a couple houses down asked me if I could build their fence also. And I said, I really don't know what I'm doing. She goes, no, it looks fine. Just do the same thing. And I was like, all right. So I built her fence and it was a little more improved, still horrible looking, but it was more, it enclosed her yard. So, and then next thing, a neighbor behind said, hey, I've got somebody that needs a fence built. And then next thing you know, I'm building fences every other weekend. I was off 3 days every other weekend and just got to the point, literally every other weekend I was building a fence. And it was great side income for me with addition being a cop at the time. And it got to the point where about a year into it, I landed this huge job in Lillington and it was going to keep me busy for about a month or two or about a month or so. But the income was equivalent to what I was making as a cop for like 3 months. So at this point, I believe it was around November, I talked to Evelina about it and we talked and we prayed about it. Do I quit being a cop and pursue this full time? And that's when we decided to do it. And well, little did I know that in December and January, it's very, very slow building fences. And I was like, so I actually called back to the police department. And I said, hey, how are things going there? You know, they're like, oh, we're doing great. Yada, yada. And I said, okay, you don't need any help or anything. And they're like, no, we're good right now. And I was like, all right, well, just let me know. And so I said, so much to going back to being a cop right now. I'm in this full time. So that's when I just pursued things. I was fortunate enough with Evelina being a nurse where she could pick up extra shifts and really helped subside the income that I feel was failing to bring in at that point.
I'm sure people can relate that have businesses. They know what it's like with a startup and you don't know what you're doing you're spending hours and hours trying to get it going. Now, there were times that you didn't even know if you were going to be able to pay for your electric.
Yeah, that's when stuff. Well, again, this was me. This goes back to exactly what I was talking about before. I didn't know it was time to pay the bill until, not saying I didn't know, but I didn't pay the bill until they came to literally cut the lights off at the house. Evelyn would be in the middle of doing dishes or something like that. And the power gets cut off at the house. So Jerry, they cut off the power again. You got to turn it back. Like, it's happened multiple times. I would say 5, 6, 7 times.
Now, did you have the money to pay for it this time?
I had the money. Okay. It was just, again, how I was raised. Just the phone got cut off. It's time to pay the phone bill. The power got cut off. It's time to pay the power bill. And that happened several times. Evelina was in the shower one time and the water got cut off. Like, true story.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So then I was like, okay, I need to.
You need like an alert on your phone.
I need to just do better. The ways I was raised was not the right way. This is not the right way to be living. And I wasn't really ashamed either. That's the weird thing. I was just like, it was.
Well, you didn't know.
It's exactly correct. You don't know until you know, right? And obviously, I know other people. I knew it wasn't normal, but it didn't bother me. I was like, oh, well. And I remember taking the kids out. We would go to Pizza Inn and eat dinner. And it got to the point where the kids actually knew, oh, we're going to Pizza Inn. Is the power off at the house again? It was like, and we'd had come home and then the power would be back on because it always got cut back on that night. So that was our life. And I'm not going to say I was proud of it, but that was definitely, that was just eye-opening things that, again, I was like, hey, I need to change. So from there, tried to do a better job. And then you have kids and life kicks in and get into sports. Oh, go back to the house. We never even got that house that we built.
Wow.
Yeah, we never even got the house. Like, we were approved and all that good stuff, but it was in 07, 08, right when the market crashed, and people, they were giving away the mortgages still. I mean, they were like, oh, you can handle both mortgages. And Evelina, that's where she really put her foot down. She says, no, we are not doing that. It is what it is. And we are not going to get the other house. We're going to stay where we're at and go from there. And I remember actually sitting there crying. Like, I got my car in the parking lot and I was like, God, why would you even allow this to happen? Why would you allow me to go through this whole process of learning things? I never would have started the fence company.
Wow.
If we didn't put the house on the market.
Wow.
And I believe that's truly why God opened a door. If I never put the house on the market, never even would have built a fence, my own fence. So it never would have happened.
That's amazing. And yeah. Tell us about your fence company. What do you do now?
Yeah.
Big Jerry's Fencing.
Big Jerry's. Hey. There you go. It's Big Jerry's Fencing. It was a company, again, didn't know anything about starting a business. I just wanted to make some extra money. And then it just, like I said, I was just always honest with people. I built a good base relationship with builders. And I just always was innovative with things also. Some would say I was lazy, which I'm not going to deny, but I was always an innovative, some would call it innovative way of thinking. When you're out measuring, you're setting your post 8 feet apart. Well, you would always take a tape measure and keep dragging to measure 8 feet and spray paint the ground. Well, I was like, well, why don't I just cut a 2x4 8 foot long and just pick that up and drag it up, keep dragging that along. And then I always just found easier ways of doing things.
And don't you have something on your website where you can actually get the measurements by GPS or something?
That's exactly correct.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, you have the Google imagery and stuff like that. And this was years ago. We came into this where we just started doing things remotely where we figured out how we can start measuring lots remotely. And we utilize that, but it's magnified significantly, a whole lot more than that. Now, people email us their survey in a PDF format or something. We can actually scale it off and we'll draw their fence on there. Email them back a sketch with that image, with a picture of their fence and all their measurements. And so they can actually submit that to the HOA for approval process, or Raleigh requires for permitting process. You've got to have that. In fact, we found out about a year or two ago that Raleigh actually uses our sketch that we submit to a customer. They actually use our sketch, but they whited out the Big Jerry's Fencing logo on it as an example of what it should look like.
You guys have great fences now, by the way. So you've come a long way.
I just think
that's an incredible story, because what you saw is like, what are you doing, God? Mm-hmm. And now how many franchises do you have?
There's 20 locations now. One is my brother's in Jacksonville, Florida, and mine, which is a franchise, but it's not. There's 18 other new locations that are owner operated by other people.
All started because of your house that people wanted a fence, and you were like, well, I can just go do it.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that.
Amazing. And how God has just blessed it. And we have several in this neighborhood.
Yeah, and you were a huge part of that. You're like,
well, eventually we'll get one in our yard. You're like, I want a mini donkey, so.
And you could do it out here in Fuquay.
Yes.
No, you were awesome, and I appreciate that. You're like, you had the Big Jerry's Fencing sign in your yard, but didn't have a fence.
I
don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. You're like, are they going to build a fence? Is he going to do it or what? But it
we
worked
will.
Out. It
if
worked
we do
out.
Get a fence, it will definitely be
I appreciate that. No, it worked out definitely. As you said, there's several of our fences in the neighborhood and stuff. So that's awesome. And I'm very grateful for that. But you build relationships with people. And I think that's more where you meeting and networking people, but just meeting good people, good people find each other.
You remind me of Mike because I feel like you're a harmony guy. You like to get along with people. You're very nice and you truly care about people.
Yeah. Thought that a lot. Mike hates confrontation. He'd rather just avoid it and, hey, what do I need to do to make it right or whatever. And I'm the same way, unless it's going to cause me more heartache. And that's one of the things I had to learn being in business. If a mistake happened, let's make it, change it from a mistake and make it into a lesson. That's how I learned to look at it. That was not taught. That's just something I got tired of making mistakes and constantly repeating those. And I was like, hey, hold on a second. What do we need to do to prevent this from happening again? So we would have meetings. What occurred? Why did it occur? And how do we prevent it from happening again? And so I take a mistake and turn to a lesson. Now, those lessons can be expensive sometimes, but as long as you're preventing it from happening again, that's the goal. And you end up saving money in the long run. And that's one of the things we offer that you benefit from. I was like, why do people want to buy a franchise? Well, they want to learn your process. They want to learn from your mistakes. And that's what they do. Other people can go out and start their own fence company. Other people can go start their own restaurants. But you learn if there's another process in place. And we have a good family of people, of other owners that we can send messages to and ask questions. Hey, has anybody ever ran into this? And all that good stuff. And so it's a tight-knit community, but everybody's very accessible to each other. And we learn from each other.
How do you balance your faith and your business? Do they go hand in hand?
They are 100% hand in hand. 100%. I know that I would not have what I have if it wasn't for God. And that's not to sound cliche. That's a very, very true statement. I remember I was struggling financially about 10 years ago, 8 years ago. I was struggling and I finally had to come to Jesus moment. I was literally driving on Highway 55 and I was making a U-turn on those horrible U-turns you have to make on 55 in Holly Springs. But I was making a U-turn and I said, God, I am tired of chasing money. I said, I could be more productive if I'm not doing this all the time. And something clicked. I'm not saying anything I did. I think God was like, okay, you get it. And God allowed me some freedom. The business started doing very well at that point. It was always doing good. It was always growing, but I was able to manage money better. Things were getting paid. We were getting more commercial accounts where that's more things that always will keep you busy. And I was just like, okay. And I don't see it then at that point, but later when I go and look back, I can reflect. God will never put more on you can handle, but he'll never give you more than you can handle also. So whether it be money or what have you, that's why a lot of millionaires win the lottery and they end up broke. They weren't prepared for it or God didn't put them in a place where they trusted God with. I'm not saying everybody. I just know that from my standpoint, I believe that to be
me too. I can see my life. He didn't give me certain things because I don't think at that point I would have been able to handle them. He doesn't want to give us something as a son or daughter that will destroy us. He wants us to rely on him and look to him.
You're 100% correct. And you don't appreciate it until now.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm glad that who knows how I would have screwed up. And it's kind of the same way with being disciplined. I'm grateful. I didn't see it when I was getting spanked or whatever as a child. But I look back, I was like, me and my cousins, we talk about it. Like today, people consider we were abused. And I'm actually grateful the way, you know, it sucked when it happened.
I had my dad's handprint on my bottom.
Yes, ma'am.
And my mom would use this paddle. And that thing hurt.
Yeah.
But there's a verse that says the rod of correction will.
Yes, that's exactly correct. Yeah.
There is biblical truth. You're not trying to beat them. You're trying to correct them.
That's 100% correct. And it is biblical. And the pastor I grew up with, it's funny in life how you can always remember the most strangest things and comments that were made. But I'll never forget one of the sermons I heard one time. He was talking about how you should never discipline in anger.
Mm.
And it's because that could be dangerous and could be reckless. And I don't even know if he'd ever remember saying that, but it's something that stuck out to me. And
that's
I was like,
good.
I don't even have kids. But it's for whatever reason that stuck out to me as a teenager, him saying that. And I remember Evelina was not raised in church. She was raised Catholic from being from Poland, as you mentioned earlier.
I'm going to have her on here sometime.
Oh, just you two will get along. She's so much smarter than I am too. And that's why we compliment each other on so many things. But she pretty much turned atheist until we were invited back to a church when I was a cop. And I was very cautious about that. I remember I was like, I could never take her to the church I was raised in.
I know you said at 18 you walked away. Yeah. So when did you return to the Lord?
Till when probably about Vanessa was two. So probably about 19 years ago. So I would say I was probably about 25, 26 years old. So
were you a cop at this time?
I was a cop. That's exactly right. And when I was a cop, I was about a year or two in, and one of my coworkers, one of the police buddies, he said, hey, why don't you come to our church? And I said, well, what religion? He goes, non-denominational. And I was like, well, that doesn't sound good. That's That sounds, and I just remember how I was raised. Anything other than independent Baptist, you're going to burn and go to hell. I mean, that's how I was raised. And anything else is a cult. That's how I was raised, unfortunately. But I was like non-denominational. I said, do you believe in salvation? He goes, yes. How are you saved? Well, you accept Christ as your savior. And I was like, and you believe he died on the cross? I said, all these beliefs are there. So I asked Evelina and she said, yeah, we'll go check it out. I was very shocked. I was like, all right. So we went. And they met at East Cary Middle.
Wow,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, they met at East Cary Middle School. And that was weird to me, going to a school for a church. I was always in a big building.
Same. Like,
yeah. So that was different for me. I wasn't used to that. And I remember seeing guys playing the electric guitar and the drums. I'm like, I'm going to get struck by lightning. I was like really, really uncomfortable being there. But hearing the pastor talk, I was like, wow, that's exactly what I believe. And he was talking to you. It wasn't like you're going to burn and go to hell if you do this and blah, blah, blah. It was nothing like that at all. And I'll never forget leaving church that day, school, church. I'll never forget leaving that day. And I asked Evelina what she thought. She goes, I'm glad you asked. I had an unbelievable time.
Wow.
I was really shocked. And she goes, well, what'd you think? I was like, yeah, I enjoyed it also. But I was really nervous. I really was. It's just, that was my first time back into a church in 8 years, call it. And it was not what I was expecting. But again, I knew that if Evelina went to the church I grew up in, it would not have happened.
Was that her first time to church?
It was her first time in anything other than a Catholic church.
That's okay.
The first time since, as far as I know, that since she was probably 15 years old, she was in church. So that experience, and we continued going. And we got very active in the church also as well. And then the church ended up splitting. We were in a small group with the pastor. And so we became good friends with them, him and his wife. And we kept going around looking at different churches. And that's actually one of the churches we visited was Hope. And saw Mike preach. And obviously, as anybody knows, is God-gifted, how he speaks and how he relates. And he talks to you. He doesn't preach at you. He talks to you. And you felt so comfortable there. And then it wasn't until maybe a couple years in doing that. That was 18 years ago. Because I'll never forget, Landon was 1 month old. It was December of 07 was when we went. And it wasn't until a couple of years later where I learned that Mike grew up in Durham and went to Liberty. And I was like, got to be kidding me. I thought at first he was talking about Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia. But then he was talking about Liberty in Durham. And I was like, wow. Then I was like, okay, I've got to talk to this guy. And then we talked. And I'll never forget, he's like, it's a whole lot different. And he's like, he knew exactly. I was like, yeah, this is definitely different than how we were raised. And me and Mike had that connection. Then I just ended up serving on security there. I knew we were supposed to serve. Well, that's why I learned about serving. That's not nothing you learn about. You were pressured into it. I mean, how we were raised. Again, if you don't do it, you're gonna
burn.
Yeah, you're going to hell. It's one of those things. But it was, or it was severely frowned upon, let's put it that way. Or you were second class, or everybody had their cliques and stuff. And not to knock at all how I was raised. It wasn't our cup of tea. In fact, Fellowship, the church I was raised, great, great church. And Pastor Rick Finley, he's just a great guy, great man of God. And I'll never forget when my dad died, I had to get back in contact with him because that's where his funeral was going to be. And I told him about where I'm at, how life is for me and stuff like that. And he had high hopes for me going to a Bible college. And obviously that never happened with the story I've told you so far. But I felt the need to reach out to him on the side. So I messaged him. I either emailed him or messaged him on Facebook. I can't remember which, but I wanted him to know that, hey, just because I did not turn out how you wanted me to, I didn't go to the Bible college that you thought was going to happen, I am grateful for how I turned out, and you are a huge part of why I am the man I am today, the father I am today. And he responded back. I don't remember exactly, but he was grateful for the kind words. And I heard he actually talked about it in one of his sermons afterwards. And he talked about how proud he was of me. And again, it's one of the things that you pick and choose what you learn in life and how you're going to relate that to your life. My father-in-law, he's a genius. He's an atheist, but he's a genius. And he's read the Bible. He's read so many different books. In fact, he's a Mensa member. For those who don't know, Mensa, you're a certified genius. You take this test. Apparently, you can only take once. I don't know if that's changed or not, but if you pass, then you're a Mensa club member. And he passed it. But I would be foolish not to ask him any questions in life that I have. Not that I'm going to take his full advice on anything, but at least I would be foolish not to listen to his perspective on things. So I always reach out to him on any major decision I do in life, and I get his thoughts and opinions on things because it brings a perspective that I might not have thought about. And the same thing I do with Evelina, because she definitely got her dad's wisdom on so many levels. And so, again, that's one of the ways we complement each other. I have more of the street smart type of thing, but she has the book smart and the knowledge of so many things I'd never even thought of. Hey, what do you think about this? We respect each other and bounce that off each other. So that's how our relationship has grown.
How did you go from kind of religion to having a relationship? Was it like a first few years at Hope, or what kind of shifted your perspective?
It's nothing I really thought about. It's one of the things I think I have to go back and really, it just kind of happened. If I have to go back and look at it, I think you get involved in a small group. I'll be honest with you, was a huge part of it. Being in it, I'm not thinking that. I'm like, okay, you're meeting people that you don't really know, and then you end up becoming close with them. But I think just being more intentional about being in church and how can I be active in church, I think you can't help but to start having more of a relationship with Christ, not to mention other godly people. And when you realize people are praying for you also, I had cancer years ago, and I'll never forget.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. I try to forget about it also. But actually, the guy who invited me to church, it happened that many years ago, 19, 20 years ago, when I had cancer, he actually said, "Hey, Jerry, just so you know, we're praying for you in our church." I said, "Man, I appreciate that." And I was a cop, and he's actually the one who invited us to church.
Wow.
And that's where that all evolved from. And then Evelina, about, if I had to guess, probably about 5-6 years later, even though we were active in the church and going to church all the time, she finally got saved. And again, it's just what works for everybody. It's what style of preaching, of learning is appealing to different people. And I just didn't feel, now I could be wrong, I mean, but I just didn't feel that if I took her back to where I was raised, it would have gone the same way. I could be totally wrong. God works in mysterious ways, and God has surprised me many times on things, and I could be wrong, but I feel that God brought us to Hope and to have a relationship with Mike and then being part of Be Renewed. And that's a whole other story about how redemption and things come into play and just being a part of that. And it's amazing. Some people come to me and they're like, "Well, how could he do, how, you know, reflecting, how could he do this or whatever, or it's too soon to be dating somebody or what have you." And well, what's to say is too soon? That's my opinion. That's between him and God. Anything in life, that's between me and God, how fast I adapt to something, or I'm self-corrected, if you will. That's one of the things that I'm just like, what Mike needs is he needs support, he needs strength, he needs people there to listen or just be there for him. A phone call that someone's going to answer the phone. And that's what I was there. I mean, I don't want to say I felt indebted to Mike, but I felt indebted to Mike. I was like,
you were definitely a good friend to him, you and Evelina, especially as he was walking through cancer by himself. Yeah. And you guys didn't condone what he did, obviously, sin and evil and wicked, but you still loved him and you tried to restore him gently, and you were the hands and feet of Jesus in his time of need. It reminded him through your actions and Evelina's actions that God hadn't forgotten him either. And that was very important to him. Yeah, we all have a different calling from God. And two men asked him to start the Bible study and he didn't want to for a while. He thought he was disqualified. And after he wrestled with it and prayed about it, it would be disobedient for him not to step out in faith.
I agree 100%.
He did it because he wanted to be back to the man that he used to be. Same with me. He wanted to obey God at all costs, even if it meant people not liking what he's going
to
do.
You're answering to God, not to other people.
Yes.
And just to be clear, there was a small, tight, it wasn't just me and Evelyn by no means, but Mike surrounded himself with a good group of guys and we all were there for him. And we would bust his chops on things, but you needed that. One guy in particular, I won't mention names, but everybody has a great loving heart, but just not afraid of poking at Mike. You need that to lighten the mood sometimes. But we love Mike and we were there for him and this good group of guys. And Mike would have done the same thing. It's humbling. It's refreshing. It's awesome to know that you're loved so much that where God's able to still use you and doesn't turn his back on you.
Rahab is in the lineage of Jesus.
Yeah.
That's the God we serve. Yeah. Amazing. So is David.
You're 100% correct. Yeah, it hit me, not until recently, about my relationship with my son, where I'm like, man, this kid's so hard-headed, but I love him, and there's nothing I wouldn't do for him. It doesn't matter what he would do, I would still always be there for him, and it was just a light bulb. I was like, man, that is how God, I know it, but it didn't hit me.
It didn't go from your head to your heart.
And I was like, that is exactly how God looks at us. He really is our Father. There's nothing you can do that God will not want you to be, come back to him on.
Amen.
And there's nothing Landon could do. Sorry, I called your name out, son. There's nothing Landon could do that would, or any of my children, that I wouldn't forgive them or want them. I would want them to know no matter how bad it is, they can always still come to me. And it would hurt me if they didn't. And that clicked. And I was like, that's exactly what God's message is to us. That's exactly what his relationship is with us.
Amen. He doesn't want anyone to perish, but for all to come to repentance.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Repentance restores relationship. He doesn't care where you've been or what you've done. He is waiting, just like the prodigal's father.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. It's, I want you back. And okay, you screwed up. Let's move forward.
For someone wondering that might be listening, they don't really understand relationship. Maybe they grew up in a legalistic church. How would you encourage them to get that relationship with Jesus?
You've become active in church. It's one of these things that you don't know that you have a good relationship with God until you're, wow, I'm really involved. Just start off with doing something. Be a greeter. Help out in the nursery. Somehow where you can be involved in church, just go to church to start with. Make it a priority. And then find a way of, hey, what's something small that I'm good at that I can help fill a void at church? You know what? I'm a cop. I wouldn't mind doing security at church once a month or something like that, or twice a month as needed. You feel good. You're like, hey, God's using me. I'm doing something. And then next thing you know, hey, you're invited to breakfast with a group of the guys from church. Then next thing you're helping their family out, or they're helping your family out with, or moving or something. And then you're growing.
Mike loves it when you text him about the devotional. So you do devotional, reading the Bible and staying in the word. And
yeah, there's days I don't even feel like doing it. It's just like, I don't want to read. I'll get to it after I take the shower, or I'll get to it as soon as I get to work. And it's only 3 or 5 minutes just reading the verse of the day and doing this devotional. But Mike says, find a quiet place. Well, my quiet place is laying in bed. So I just, it's 3 or 4.
What about the hot tub?
Oh, I could, but it takes so long to heat up right now. But I love the hot tub. But I sit there, and I don't want to say I knock it out, but I do it, and I just feel accomplished. My day is on the right foot. It's kind of like waking up in the morning, you make the bed. Okay, I'm started the day off on the right foot.
Yes.
That's exactly what I feel when I do my devotional. Again, I might not have gotten anything from it, but at least I felt good I did it. There's certain days that I don't even remember what I read 5 minutes ago in it. A lot of that is my ADD and stuff, but if there's no pictures, it's horrible for me. I don't remember anything.
You have a study Bible?
No, my
study Bible has pictures.
I don't.
I'm like you. I'm visual. I need to see it. I can't just read it. I'm like, what are all these names in this genealogy? I can't pronounce it.
Yeah, that's where Mike does a great job.
Yes, he does.
That's where Mike does a great job when he's teaching. He puts things in perspective. And I'll tell you what was huge also, and I didn't think it was going to be, is going to Israel with you all. You saw things that we learned about growing up as children or any time in church. But for me, as I was a child, wow, there's the Dead Sea. There's the Sea of Galilee. And then seeing the
Garden of Gethsemane.
I mean, just,
and then Golgotha.
Oh my gosh. It's just amazing.
Amazing.
It's another thing that just helped things click. That was an amazing experience. And we definitely look forward to going back again one time when we can. I would like to bring the kids the next time we go, because they'll benefit from it as
well.
I'd say anybody who's thinking about it, it's worth the investment. And that's how I'd look at it. It's worth an investment, but it is so beneficial. Even if you're not religious, you've heard the biblical stories. People are like, well, how do you know this is real? Go visit the stuff.
It's interesting because we don't question Abraham, or we don't question other people that were real, but somehow we think Jesus wasn't real.
Yeah.
And you have his disciples that were willing to be martyred because of not what they believed, but because of what they saw.
They saw
the risen Savior.
Yep.
And we have archaeological. How are you going to say that?
I'm not going to try, but yes, I know what you're saying.
Archaeological. Wait, I'm saying it wrong.
Archaeological facts.
Yes. Artifacts.
Yes. Yeah.
Things that they just found something from in Gedi.
Yes. Do you remember one of the temples they had found? It was right by, they were getting ready to build a hotel or a restaurant right there next to it.
Yes.
And they dug like 3 feet or 3 meters down, and they found the old temple. And it's and
artifact. They find like the scrolls. It's amazing.
And to know that they said that Jesus visited, I think there was 12 temples or something. I can't remember exactly, but to know that was a temple and the walkways right here, to know God walked right through this door and you're right there at it. That's just the experience. Again, even if you weren't raised in church and you know the stories, if you have the opportunity to put a picture to it.
Even if people are still questioning, ask God to reveal himself to you, because he will.
Mm-hmm.
His spirit will somehow in your life make himself known. And I know God's real because I've experienced him. So I wouldn't have been delivered from my eating disorder. I could not have overcome the shame from me blowing up my world. There's been all kinds of things in my life. And I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that he is who he says he is.
Yeah. You don't realize how much of our relationship has grown with Christ until you actually sit back and look at it.
I'm like, wow, I'm
an active member in church, or I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And I find myself literally praying to God and looking for answers, not just in a time of need, just a, just all of that. I'm like, wow, I really just prayed. I do have a good relationship with Christ. I'm in a Bible group with some of the guys in the neighborhood, and a few of them are non-believers, believe it or not. They're non-believers, but they're learning and they're asking good questions. And they're like, well, why don't people just make the change? If all this is true, why don't they make change? I said, well, a lot of it is fear. They don't think they're good enough. They think it's an immediate change, and that's not how it is. You grow. You literally grow with what you're doing. You did not become a man overnight or a woman overnight. You start off as a child. You learned. You were disciplined. You were raised. You were taught. You were corrected. And that's the exact same way how you grow in your relationship with Christ. And next thing you know, where you actually have a better relationship with your parents now than you did when you were younger, because you try and handle things on your own and not go to them on so many things. But now you have a great relationship with your parents, because and that's how we have a great relationship with Christ. Before I was like, I can figure this out on my own, or I'm not good enough to talk to him about this.
I think
this.
Another thing is some people feel like they're giving up control. Like, I got to control this. They think he's boring or he's not going to bring some dream of theirs to life.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't bring it to pass, because he has something else better.
Yeah, it's 100% correct. And now it makes life too easy. Ah, there you go.
You
I
did
got it.
I got it before we got off. That's awesome.
So yeah, that's the gist of it. I'm very happy. Me and Evelyn, like I said, we're getting ready to celebrate in a few weeks. Been together 23 years. We're getting ready to celebrate that. And just to reflect and look back how much you've grown, how much our relationship has grown, and the tough times you go through in a marriage. And wow. And you just want to do better. The goal is, I think, is doing better to pass that along to your children and strive for that. And I have fallen short so many times, but my kids forgive me also. And I talk to them. I have a great relationship with them, where some of them think I'm hard on them about certain things. They don't know. It's just, hey, I just love you so much. I want what's best for you. I want you to learn from my mistakes.
Yes.
You know, but now where my daughter's, she's 21 and she's very grateful for me, and she's appreciating now what we have. And I appreciate her. I appreciate all my children. We're the point where I see her now. She's active in church when she's here.
She takes notes.
She takes notes, and she's always asking questions. And now she's got her own little girl Bible study also.
That's awesome. And she's in college.
UNC Charlotte last year. Yep. And so
shout out Vanessa.
Yes. Yes. Lovely daughter. And my son, Landon, and Christian. And Christian's a genius. You've heard him talk many times.
He's amazing. He answers questions in Sunday school.
Yes. Your mom is awesome.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for sharing today. I think we should end this by saying, hey.
I love it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Remember, when life feels out of focus, there is always one who brings clarity. We'll see you next time.